Welcome back. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live. In January of this year, we covered the release of data compiled by the Kids Count Data Center, which looks at a number of factors impacting the quality of life for children across the country. I said it then, and it bears repeating again, Mahatma Gandhi, Harry S. Truman, and Pope John Paul II echoed a similar sentiment. A society should be judged by how it treats its most vulnerable members. And while resilient, children are most certainly vulnerable. In January, the data indicated Florida has some work to do. Our state ranks near the bottom in overall quality of life for kids. We're number 47 in terms of our children's health. Dr. Noreen Dillard is the director of Florida Kids Count, and she rejoins us now for an update on some of those numbers. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Julie.
Do you have concerns about kids' quality of life in Florida? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. So, Dr. Noreen Dillard, what is the update? It's been 6 months since these numbers came out. Has anything changed for kids in Florida?
I think not really as much as we'd like. There's some ambiguity because of the changes with the budget, but right now, there has not been much in terms of progress. There was some proposals around young children in school that were promising, recess, that sort of thing. But there was not nothing addressed health insurance this session in the state legislature, which we've made such great we really over time have made great inroads on health insurance for kids. But we still have incredibly long way to go to reach even the national average.
Were there any particular legislative pieces that you were looking at or that you were watching go through the legislature?
The education with the very young children in school is hugely important. We know that both for their own development and as well as enabling their parents to get and maintain employment and education, which in turn improves the family. Like I said, there really wasn't anything to watch as far as health insurance.
So there weren't that many things really to even keep an eye on. So are you talking about like the Head Start program in Florida? Like early childhood education?
Yeah, I was talking more along the lines of the VPK, which there was a proposed increase to address enrollment, although there was a hope for more focus on not only increasing enrollment, which is important, but also the quality of education, quality of teacher preparation, and yeah. quality of teaching in those in early childhood centers.
So back in March, Florida Kids Count helped organize the 22nd annual Children's Week in Tallahassee, hoping that they could spotlight some important issues facing lawmakers in the legislative session. But we didn't really see much come out of that. Did lawmakers come and ask any questions or want to get some more information?
We were part of Children's Week, but that's the United Way is the main organizer. And so they'd be better qualified to speak to legislators on that particular in response to that.
Well, what I find interesting is that there was even an event called Children's Week in Tallahassee, and then we didn't really see much legislation being proposed on behalf of children. And I'm wondering, did any legislators seek any additional information from you or from Florida Kids Count about any of these numbers so that they could maybe draft anything, or did anybody ask for more input?
We were not approached directly by legislators. We did prepare profiles of each Senate and House district so that people could use it in going to meet with their legislators, or the legislators themselves would have been able to use it. But we were not approached by any legislators in particular.
It is pretty handy for people that are interested in what's happening in their exact county because it's broken down county by county. And I remember when we went over this data in the beginning, we really looked very closely at that. It covers a lot of factors that impact kids' quality of life, economic, health, education, family, and community. What areas would you like to see the state legislature have more of an impact? I mean, what could they impact?
Definitely they could address that health insurance, I mean, health insurance is related to getting kids out of poverty, and studies have shown getting kids out of poverty is a number one priority because it has economic effects for their families and their communities, but also their development. Kids who are relatively more well off have better developmental trajectories too, unfortunately. So that's one that we could impact.
With the health insurance?
With health insurance, mm-hmm.
So, well, the poorest ranking came in health. And when we talked last week, we had been making decent strides as a state, but we still had a long way to go. And a lot of that success was credited to the Florida's Kid Care Program, and that's the state insurance for kids. Are gains still being made there?
Well, as far as legislative action, there wasn't. This year, last year, they had expanded to legally residing children so that they would be able to get health insurance. So that, again, that was forward motion in terms of expanding the numbers of kids
that are getting
that
coverage.
Have insurance. Yeah. I mean, the last out of the Kaiser Foundation based on census data, those sorts of things, we were at 7% of kids who remained uninsured statewide, but we have been making very steady progress over the last 5-7 years.
So how is Florida's Kid Care Program funded? Is that through Medicare?
Medicaid? Yes, I'm not a total funding genius. I don't have all the details, but it's federal with state match is how Medicaid works.
Okay. So the problem that now we have at the national level, the budget from the Trump administration is calling for major cuts to Medicaid. Do you think that would have an impact on the Florida's Kid Care Program?
Oh, definitely. I don't have the exact numbers on how it would affect, but the report from the Congressional Budget Office yesterday that was analyzing the Affordable Health Care Act indicates that the majority of savings as far as health insurance is coming from Medicaid, and the idea that we would block grant – that they would block grant funds. So it actually has a net effect of reducing the amount of funds available at an on a per capita basis. So it would definitely if the federal money doesn't flow down, we don't even have the opportunity to match it at the state level to cover kids. So definitely would have an impact.
Yeah, if that budget does go through like that, we'll end up. It would look like Medicaid would be cut to the point where Florida's. What Florida would get from Washington would be reduced, and then Florida's match to that would then be reduced if they're doing matching funds. And that would end up leaving, and that was the only part where we had been making some gains. We were still at 47th in health, but, I mean, we had been making some gains in getting more kids insured, but then that would kind of be taken away.
That's correct. We wouldn't have that capacity to continue to make to even perform a sort of a holding action on where we are, let alone make inroads into getting more kids' health insurance.
So your data finds that Florida's rank when it comes to kids and economics ranks 43rd, with nearly 1 in 4 kids in the state living in poverty, and a third of kids living in households with high burdens on cost of living and parents with insecure employment. Did you see anything happen this past legislative session that may have addressed any of those concerns?
The as far as the housing cost burden, what has the potential for affecting that actually in a negative way? It's great for the taxpayers if they increase the homestead exemption for would help them a lot, but that would reduce the revenues to municipalities and local areas that would be able to use those funds for to subsidize housing and that sort of thing. So there might actually be a little backward slide on that one.
And then when it comes to education, lawmakers did pass more than $230 million in teacher and principal bonuses. What do you think about like approaching Florida's educational shortfalls by putting that kind of money into teachers' pockets if they're effective? Do you think that will help?
Increasing the quality of teachers' practice is always, you know, important. So I would definitely say investing in quality is always a good good strategy.
Yeah. And again, nationally, one proposed federal budget cut would interact with Florida. It's called Title I funding for education, money that's designed for academic programs for low-income kids. Some of the money Florida gets for that program was being proposed to be sent to charter schools. And what would that mean for Florida kids?
What Kids Count would advocate is that we want to ensure that all kids have opportunity to quality educational experiences, and that however you accomplish that, it means you need low teacher to student ratios and making sure that the teachers have the skills and experience to work with diverse populations in those schools, that they have the support from specialized personnel, whether it's reading specialists or special education, to make sure that every child has an opportunity to succeed. So taking away from that, taking funds away from education that would support those things is definitely does not help with kids being successful in school.
We are talking about the welfare of Florida kids and what's changed after a legislative session in Tallahassee. Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. And another major outcome for Florida in the past legislative session was Governor Rick Scott declaring a public health emergency when it comes to what's now considered a nationwide opioid epidemic. Governor Scott's emergency order opens up millions in federal grant funding to combat this kind of drug use. So when we're talking about child welfare, how should we think about something like opioid addiction and its impact on kids and children of addicts?
If those dollars are going to substance abuse treatment, effective evidence-based treatment, definitely it would have a positive effect on Florida's children. Mental health and substance use are one of the greatest drivers of child abuse and reporting to the child welfare, the child protective system. So anything that can be done to ensure that families who are struggling with addiction get the treatment and supports that they need to be effective parents is paramount.
Well, and the other problem with that is when you have an addiction problem with parents, it kind of can put the family at risk of or further into poverty.
Definitely, yes, it has that effect. If they're not working, it has the potential to break families up, and it costs shift to other family members. Perhaps grandparents are the largest growing sector of our caregivers. So it has a lot of ramifications for not just families but communities. For if incarceration is selected over treatment, then there's cost implications of that. There's a high cost for those sorts of things. So definitely treatment makes a big difference on a lot of levels.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like when I'm looking at your research, the biggest problem is the number of kids in poverty.
Oh, absolutely.
Because that poverty is going to affect every part of the quality of their life, their ability to be educated and get into early education programs, their ability to have health insurance that has more of that kind of preventative type of health care that puts them on that, like you said, that trajectory towards success. And it's the poverty that's the problem.
Yeah, fundamentally, that is the problem. It also, parents don't have the wherewithal, to maintain employment or get the education necessary to get jobs that pay adequately to support the family, to get health insurance, to have the sort of more discretionary income that would allow them to do the things we all like to do with our kids, and get them into Little League or piano lessons or the kinds of enrichment activities that help with their development, that help with their social interactions. Are better, parents are better equipped to do that when they're making a minimum, a living wage.
Yeah, and that's hard to do with the cost of housing in Florida. We've all talked about that gap in affordable housing, the lack thereof. And then we have another cut, and I keep talking about Washington while we're talking about a state problem, but a lot of those, the Washington decisions end up having an effect down here in Florida. But another cut that's being proposed is cuts to food stamps, which is officially known as SNAP, the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program. And Trump's budget calls for cutting nearly $200 billion over the next 10 years from that. And that's about 25% of the program's budget. Can you tell me about how that SNAP is used in Florida and what these cuts could mean for these kids?
The SNAP dollars are very limited in application. There isn't that much to go around to begin with, but it's incredibly important that children have adequate nutrition to help with their brain development, particularly at the very youngest ages. So not having access to that support and getting the high quality food is very important and prevents health problems as well as educational, not having adequate nutrition has implications for, educational achievement.
Yeah, when you're malnourished, it's kind of hard to stay awake at school.
It's right. It's hard to get it done. And we have, other problems, food deserts where there's not people don't have access to grocery stores that they can get nutritious food. There's some definitely movement on, the schools to get universal breakfast, universal lunch to ensure at least during the week, kids are getting a couple of meals a day that help counteract that. But you're really taking away a very important support for families who are really trying to do the best they can for their kids.
And it becomes a tough time, too, going into summer because you're out of school, so you don't have that anymore. And that kind of takes us to a call that we have coming in from Julia in Estero. Julia, what would you like to say?
Yes, hello. I'm here in line. I was listening about the food and all that you're saying, and I always say that food is very important. In schools, kids are not getting the right food. They're getting shoveled in stuff that really they don't like, and tons of food is thrown away every day. And like, for example, they get milk, and the milk says even in the carton that it's made from cows that are treated with grown hormones. And that's why we have kids with a lot of health issues. And, for example, middle schoolers, they don't have time to go to a bathroom or drink water because they have to rush through the subject. And eating time, lunch time, it's not quality time. They have to rush through the line, eat quickly, and it's kind of no table manners, no downtime to acknowledge that you're eating healthy. And a lot of things like that. It's a combination of a lot of things that needs to be addressed.
All right. Well, I thank you for your comment. I really appreciate it. And one of the things that did come out of this last legislative session was recess. And maybe some of that time could be allocated to relax and try to sit down and eat lunch, because I think kids only get about 20 minutes. Have you heard anything about that, Noreen?
Oh, the recess bill is definitely – it's good news. It's sort of unqualified time that there doesn't have to be academic activity, so to speak, but time that kids can get out, move around, get their blood flowing. So it has an educational benefit to get them up and moving. So that is a bright spot.
I wonder if schools are going to be able to use some of that time, though, for kids to not hustle through lunch, and they can maybe just, spend a little more time there, because it is a very limited amount of time.
It is a very limited amount of time. I'm not sure how and whether those two would be paired.
Yeah, I don't know. That would probably be up to the schools. And I wanted to ask you one last question. If you were able to create a dream scenario of legislation that could really help kids, what would be the most helpful thing that lawmakers could do to improve our kids' lives?
Okay, so this will be no surprise if the folks have been listening in the last few minutes, but ensuring that kids have access to health insurance. I would also advocate for funds for mental health and substance abuse treatment for parents as well as kids. Florida ranks at the absolute bottom in terms of its mental health and substance abuse treatment. And then I think the early childhood piece, really ensuring that kids have those quality early education experiences so they have the maximal opportunities to grow and thrive.
Yeah, and I want to add to the dreamlike scenario here. If we could get the parents into substance abuse and things that need it, and then also be able to offer as part of that some sort of counseling or therapy or anything for the kids that have been witness to that in their young lives.
Definitely.
That could be helpful for them going forward. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank our guest, Dr. Noreen Dillard with Florida Kids Count. I really appreciate you giving us this update on the welfare of Florida's kids. Doesn't sound like a whole lot happened, but maybe next legislative session we'll see a little bit more action. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Julie, and I do hope that it inspires some action next legislative season.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Our show today was produced by Matthew Smith. Our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO, Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.